Ring has a new camera for your front door. There are more places to get your iPhone repaired. Why you should log into your apps every once in a while. Plus, we're playing the new Harry Potter game. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMuro. This is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the stuff I think you should know about happening in the tech world. Plus, we're answering your tech questions. Joining me is producer Megan. Welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. I do want to start with an apology, though, because we had last week's show that we did from China, which was great. I mean, I thought it was really interesting, the content, but the actual quality of the podcast was not up to par. And you know us, we are sticklers on quality.
Oh, yeah.
So
it was bad.
I feel like every podcast we've done so far has sounded different, but that's the thing. Podcasting is still emerging, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though I was doing podcasting at CNET about 15 years ago, but it's still new, right? It's new to a lot of people, but I think our mistake last week was trying a new mobile setup. When we went to China, we tried new microphones. We tried, everything was different how we recorded the show. And if we were total pros, like with audio, we would find that would be fine, but we're not.
Yeah.
And so clearly
we
were talking into the wrong end of the microphone.
Were we actually?
I don't know. We might've been.
Oh,
so long story short, if you listen to the podcast, which a lot of you did, thank you.
Hopefully
that's not our main, like, we're not,
that's not us.
Yeah. Now, if this one sounds really bad, we are trying new equipment again.
Then we're going to be really sad.
Then we'll just give up.
No.
But let's start with the story. Maybe this is the biggest story of the week. It's probably the most complicated story of the week for most people, but I do think it could have potential impact. So we've heard a lot about Bitcoin. We've heard a lot about cryptocurrency. Nobody has been able to make it work in a big, meaningful way just yet. And now some people might fight me on that. But the reality is, are you using crypto?
No.
No. Am I? No. We're two kind of normal people. I do have, okay, full disclosure, I do have $25 worth of cryptocurrency to my name.
Something.
So it's like, you know.
More than I have invested in.
Well, so, and it's funny that you call it an investment, because when I bought that, I did it as a test to see. I bought it through the Square Cash app, and it went down and down and down, and I just checked it, and it actually is back up to $24.60. So over the past, like, year or two, I've only lost, like,
40 cents.
And it still can go up.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that by the time I retire, I just forget about that. And it's like, oh, no. Oh, what's this? $1 million just sitting there in crypto.
I don't think it grows like that.
No,
but
probably not. So Facebook is basically pioneering the charge for a new type of simple global currency called Libra. And this is backed. It's interesting because they're backing it by the blockchain, which is, you know, technology for, you know, and digital currency, basically. But there's a lot of companies on board here. So if anyone can make this happen, it could be Facebook. And what they would want you to do is use this cryptocurrency to, it would be integrated into the Facebook app, into WhatsApp, into Facebook Messenger. So basically, if I owed you $20, I could pay you right through there, kind of like what you do with Venmo. But the way Venmo works is it's all backed by your checking account or your bank account or your credit card, right? This would be backed by none of those things. You would basically just have this currency, like it would be its own thing. So I know, doesn't that sound complicated?
So complicated.
So you'd have to buy it somehow. And then once you buy it, that is your currency. So the idea is that if enough people and places accept the currency, it then takes off. So think about Visa and MasterCard, for example, right?
Yes.
The only reason those work, they're not really a currency. They're just a way to pay, right?
Right.
So you still have to pay the bill with real money at the end of the month, right?
Right.
Or, you know, depending portion of the bill, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully you're paying
in
the whole
case,
thing.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But the reality is, the reason why Visa and MasterCard are so, like, I will take it from you, you'll take it from me, whatever, or a business takes it, is because it's accepted everywhere, right? And people have established that, like, okay, these are true, these are real, like, we take it. So with Libra and this whole new cryptocurrency, if enough people take it, it's like, okay, well, I can use my Libra at,
Starbucks.
Exactly.
But where I get confused is, so then you would pay at the end of the month Libra?
Yeah, see, that's where it gets kind of weird. It's just, you just kind of keep your money in there. That's the weird thing. It's like,
okay.
It just becomes your money.
Weird.
So, yeah, and so what they're doing, and it's also even more weird because there's another thing. It's called, let's see, it's like Libra. There's, I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Yeah,
I truly want to understand how this works. So,
well, I'm not going to be the one to explain
no,
it.
No, I know. I know.
I barely understand.
By the way, I've had like 5 people try to explain it to me. And
yes.
It's just.
I've had, when I did the crypto story, like cryptocurrency, we did like Crypto 101
you
at KTLA.
You had like the creator explain it to you.
Yeah. No, we had like a guy who's a good crypto guy. And yeah. I have a friend that does crypto stuff. But I still, it's like you don't really understand it. It's a currency that's like kind of made out of thin air, right?
Yeah.
Now, this one will be backed by actual currency, which is making it more stable, which makes it more appealing to people. Anyway, long story short, that's what you need to know is that Facebook might take over the whole world when it comes to money. But other companies that are on board with this, and this is why it might work, listen to these names: MasterCard, PayPal, Stripe, Visa, eBay, Lyft, Spotify, Uber, and a whole bunch of others. So what that tells me is that at the very least, you'll be able to use this currency among all those things. And if you think about those things, that's a lot. So now you can, let's say you can use your Libra currency to pay your MasterCard account at the end of the month. Wow. So again, it's getting real. And
it is getting real.
It's fascinating. So anyway, we'll just have to keep on kind of up to date on everything that Facebook's doing with that. It's not going to happen overnight, but it probably will happen soon.
So you would use like some of your $25 to buy a Starbucks.
Exactly. Right. Okay. Like I would, instead of like right now that Bitcoin that I have exists inside that app, I can't do anything with it except pay other people who like use Bitcoin.
Got it.
But let's say Starbucks, I want to buy like a $10 gift card and they're like, oh, we accept this Bitcoin. I just use it. And same thing with this new one from Facebook. It's like, if I can use it to pay you back for, you know, whatever, like you go out and get a coffee, I can be like, oh, here's $3, you know, through my app.
Got it.
So, anyway.
Interesting.
All right. So let's start with the first question.
I love this next question. It's from Lily Alala, and she wrote on your Facebook page. Hey, Rich, thank you for all of the useful information you provide during your segment on KTLA News. I have a question. Do you have any suggestions or can you recommend a good Android app for locating or keeping track of my kids? I have 12-year-old twins. They both have phones. I need peace of mind. Please let me know.
Okay. And what was the name again?
Lily.
Lily. So this is a question I get all the time. People want to be able to track their kids, and it makes sense. If they have a cell phone, you want to be able to track them. Why not, right? So there are tools that are built into iOS, and she didn't really mention what kind of phones her kids have. I feel like she would have mentioned if they had iPhones, but maybe they didn't.
Yeah, but she says she has an Android.
Oh, she has an Android.
She said a good Android app.
Oh,
so
okay.
I assume.
So there you go. So she wants Android. Okay, so on iPhone, obviously, they have the app called Find My. They changed it. Mm-hmm. It used to be called Find My iPhone. Now it's just called Find My.
Mm-hmm.
So that would work on the iPhone side of things. But if you're a mixed family and you have like Android and you have iOS in the family, you want an app that works across both of those things. And so the app that I recommend to most people is called Life 360. Have you heard of this?
Mm-mm.
So it's kind of the most popular one out there that basically the bottom line kind of thing is it tracks you. You know, you sign it up on your phones and you can see where your kids are on a map. That's the basic thing. Now that's free, but if you really want to get the most use out of it, you're going to have to pay. Because what I found when I tested it is that the free stuff is fine, but the location's not updated as much as you want. It's not real time. Like there's little caveats that you, after using it for like 2 days, you're like, this would be better if I paid for it. So with that in mind, you know, try it out, start it out, see how it works. And I think it's going to do exactly what you need. They have a lot of features in there. Like, I mean, there's so many features. You can get a text when your kid gets to school. You can get a text when your kid leaves school. You can get see how fast they're going on a map, like if they're driving. You can get a crash detection. So if they crash, God forbid, you'll get hopefully it's a fender bender. You'll get an alert about that. So again, they've built pretty much the app that parents want to be able to track their kids. Obviously, you know, your kids have to be on board because they can uninstall it or whatever. You can probably password protect it. But again, once you use it, so like with the free, it's zero. With Plus, it's $3 a month. And with Driver Protect, all those driver features, it's $7.99 a month. So I, as a parent, small price to pay. Mm-hmm. When I'm ready to do this with my kids, I think $3 a month is just fine. So again, like little things that they change. So place alerts with free, you only get 2 with the free. Plus, you get unlimited. History, you only get 2 days with the free. You get 30 days with unlimited. crime reports. I don't know what that is. But again, so really it comes down to how much of the location do you get with the free versus the paid. So, but Lily, that's going to do it for you. Life360.com, and it works on, various apps, iOS and Android.
Cool.
So speaking of phones, Apple is partnering with Best Buy for expanded repair service. So in the past, if you wanted to get your iPhone repaired, you could do it at a bunch of places, but Apple likes when you do it at their place because it keeps your phone in warranty, right? And also, if you have AppleCare, it will be included in your AppleCare price if you go to an Apple store or one of their authorized retailers, which, you know, in a city like LA, we have a lot of these little like Mac stores, right? You know, like I think there's like Melrose Mac and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. if you live in like the middle of nowhere, you don't really have access to a lot of places, including the Apple store, right?
Right.
You might have a Best Buy in your city, but not an Apple store. Well, now Best Buy is an official repair place for Apple. And what does that mean? 1,000 Best Buys across the U.S. will now provide expert service and repairs for Apple products. So that means if you have AppleCare, you can bring your phone in there. They'll do all the stuff under warranty, which is really nice. And it's also backed by Apple. So if there's a problem with the repair down the line, they're not like, well, where'd you bring this? You're like, oh, Best Buy. They're like, sorry, we can't do anything because they've ruined your phone. Now that repair is still covered under Apple. So
that's cool.
It is cool. And especially, you know, again, this is a story for the rest of the US, not Los Angeles per se, because in LA,
yeah.
you've got a million Apple stores. There's like, you know, there's probably 10 of them in like a 5 mile radius. But if you're in somewhere like they mentioned a couple cities, Yuma, Arizona, Sioux City, Iowa, Twin Falls, Idaho, Casper, Wyoming, Bismarck, North Dakota, those all have Best Buys, but they didn't have an Apple store. So now in those places, you can easily go and get your phone fixed or any nice. Apple product. While I'm on the subject of phones, let me talk about Walmart. They are expanding walmart.com to let you fully upgrade your phone online. So before, you had to do this in store, and this is not like a huge deal, but it's kind of big. Walmart is big, right? A lot of people know Walmart for better prices, and a lot of times Walmart sells cell phones at a discount. So now you can do the entire upgrade process online if you have AT&T. So right now they're just starting with AT&T, but you go to walmart.com, you choose your, you know, your plan, your device, your payment plan. They handle all that stuff just like you would if you were at the store, but you can do it online. You get the device within 2 days and you activate it and it's done. So why would you want to choose walmart.com over AT&T or any place else? Well, they might have a better deal. So now you can shop around, right? Mm-hmm. So historically, if you were with AT&T, you'd probably be able to go to AT&T.com to upgrade your phone, or you can go into a store, or you can go to Best Buy. But I don't think Best Buy does it online. Maybe they do, but I don't think they do. Mm-hmm. But now you can go to Walmart.com and like wow. just check the prices. And so what I've seen is they say phones are up to $200 less. So you could get a discount on that. They're offering the iPhone 10 at $300 off. So it's $500 for the 64 gigabyte model, which is good. That's the 10, not the 10S.
Right.
But again, so what I saw is that the prices worked out to about $8 a month less mm-hmm. than if you did this straight up through AT&T. So $8 a month. I mean, I call that free Spotify.
Yeah.
Even though Spotify is
free
10.
Spotify.
Free Hulu, right?
Yeah, true.
Okay. True. All right, Megan, you're up.
Okay, so your next question comes from actually a top fan on Facebook. Her name is Mom Sluggo Gone.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, question on reverse phone lookup. I can't seem to find a legit free have some information when looking up phone numbers. Cannot find a website where it shows if the number is a scammer or not. Can you help? Thank you.
Okay. So there are a lot of websites that do this, but most of them are total bogus. Like you don't want to go down those websites because what happens is you've seen it. What's the one that you mentioned earlier?
Spokio.
Yeah. Spokio. So there's like a whole bunch of these like Spokio and like My Life and My Way and all these weird like people search websites
yeah.
that generally give you just enough information, but then they're like, oh, pay $50 to like get more information about this person or whatever it is. And it's really like, it gets you in because there is publicly available information that they scrape and they put on there. So you're like, oh, they must have it. But then it's like, it's not very well done.
Mm-hmm.
So long story short, what I would recommend, very simple, is whitepages.com. So I've been using this for a while. I used to have this app on my phone I don't know if they still do an app or not, but I used to have it on my Android where it would just, when I got a phone call, it would just show me the name, which was super easy. Now with spam and robocalls, you know, I don't know how many phone numbers you're looking up, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd say the name Sluggo or whatever it was, but it's like, you know, the white pages. So I just did a quick search and it does have some good information on phone numbers. A lot of times they want you to pay about $2.50 a month for 20 lookups. So again, all this information, like I don't really know of a free place anymore to look up a phone number. You can try Googling a lot of times.
That's what I do. You know,
and yeah, if it's a business phone number, it's going to show up in Google, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not a business phone number, it's not going to show up, you know, but like right. A lot of times, and if it's a scam phone number, a lot of times it'll say like known scammer or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it really depends. But if you're looking to manually look up numbers online, I think whitepages.com is probably going to be like the most legit place to do that. I'm trying to see who owns them at this point. It's owned by, I don't know who it's owned by. It's just White Pages, I guess. So anyway, good question about us. Let's see what they say. But they all do this. Yeah, White Pages was founded in 1997. So
wow.
That's old for the 20, web.
22 years old.
Wow. All right. Speaking of, I always say that, speaking of.
Speaking of.
I'm not going to speak of it. But Ring has a new camera. You're familiar with Ring that goes,
yes.
The Ring video doorbell that kind of made the first video doorbell and made that product very popular. Well, they've been adding slowly but surely a lot of different products to their lineup. The latest is called the Ring Door View Cam. And this is a, it's basically, what do they call it? Like a peephole, right, on your door?
Mm-hmm.
This replaces the peephole with a camera. So it's super easy to install. No screws, no installation, no wires, no nothing. You charge this thing up, you pop out your old peephole, and you push this thing in. So the way it looks is it looks like a Ring video doorbell, but a little bit smaller with kind of like a pipe at the end. Imagine that. Or like a hollow tube that pushes through your door. So it's held on to your door on the backside with like some sort of, you know, mounting or whatever.
Okay.
And then on the front, it just sits on the front of your door flush.
So you have to screw through your door.
Well,
You
should have an opening through your door where the peephole was. So you remove that and then you push this thing through your door and just attach it. So the reviewer for CNET said that it was a little flimsy feeling because, you know, there is really no mounting hardware. It just kind of pops onto your door, but she said that's not really a deal breaker. Although she does think that $199 is a little expensive for this because it seems a little bit cheaper than their typical doorbell that, you know, you put on the side of the door that you know comes with a bunch of mounting screws and it's a little bit more official.
Right.
But at the same time, I love this idea because Ring is basically trying to put a camera on every home in America, however they can do it, right?
Yeah.
And this is really aimed at sort of apartment dwellers.
I was going to say it's for like apartments probably.
And a lot of apartments, like I'm trying to think my old apartment, I feel like we did have a peephole, but I feel like it must be a standardized size, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're selling this product, maybe it comes with some adapters and stuff, but to make it that easy to attach to your door, it must just be a standardized peephole size that they drill through and like put this little mounting hardware on, which makes sense.
That's
right?
A good question for Google.
Is there a standard peephole size?
Yeah.
So that's the deal.
I'm
so the only downside of this device, according to CNET, is that it's a little bit expensive and you also have to pay $3 a month if you want any cloud storage at all. So the way all Ring devices work, they can live stream the video, which is fine. If someone rings your doorbell, you can view the person on your phone, say hi, yes and no to them. But as soon as you disconnect that call, it's like, boom, that's gone. So if you want a record of anything, you have to pay. And so I pay, I think it's $30 a year, maybe.
Okay.
I think they've raised that price. Because if she's saying $3 a month, that's $36 a year. So, and the reason why she really doesn't like that payment is because Apple announced at their last event that if video cameras like security cameras enable HomeKit, which is their smart home platform, you'll get 10 days of free clip storage. So that's, and 10 days is, all you really need is like 2 or 3 days, right?
Right.
Because it's like, if someone came to your house and robbed it, you're not going to find out 2 weeks later. You know what I mean?
Like no, unless you were on vacation.
Yes.
Sorry.
But when you still know,
you'd
still know
because
you'd get an alert to your phone, unless you're on a remote vacation where you don't check your email or text messages or anything.
And you don't have neighbors that like pay attention at
right.
all to like.
Which is probably true. Like neighbors probably don't care at all.
True.
Neighbors these days, I mean, they're just like they look away, right?
I did, by the way, Google what is the standard peephole size.
Okay.
And the only thing I can find is just like the height.
Okay.
So it says the average height is between 4 and 5.5 feet from the ground.
Oh, that's weird.
That sounds pretty low.
I see 4 and 5 feet. No, that's standard. That's pretty standard. Yeah, because you don't want it like super high.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 43 inches above the floor. That's the standard, I guess. But there must be a standard like drill size.
That, yeah.
Like, you know, because if you're making peepholes, it must be a standard piece of hardware that, you know, anyway.
That makes the peephole.
Yes, that makes it stay to your
door. Sounds like people.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so next question comes from Devin. It's about Venmo sharing. So he says, I enjoy watching your segments on KTLA, and I just saw a piece on this morning show about Venmo transaction sharing. Isn't the sharing a primary component of the app? My friends and I have ours set to public because it's always been that way, and I just assumed that was part of the social aspect for the app. Typically, there aren't very many details. The amount or banking info is never included. It's typically just an emoji of food or movie tickets, and then to the person who you paid to. Are there additional details that are shared that we may not know about?
All right, so you know I'm a big Venmo hater.
I know.
I refuse to use Venmo. So here's the thing.
I use it all the time.
I know, and everyone does.
Yeah.
We talked about this on TV, and the reason the story came up that this researcher, because Venmo, a majority of Venmo payments are public, because by default, when you make a payment that's public, the details are public, right?
Well, I do private.
Right,
sometimes.
But you change it. But the default is public.
Yeah, right.
Right. But
right.
There's, when you think about a default, a lot of people don't change the default.
Right.
So this researcher said, hey, look, we scraped like, I don't know, 7,000 transactions. We found that people are paying for drugs. We found people put things in the memo line that they don't
say drugs?
Yeah. Well, or maybe a drug emoji. There's a lot of people out there, right?
I didn't know there are drug emojis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Megan, maybe you're not paying for drugs through Venmo, but some people are.
I guess, yeah. You obviously aren't because you don't use Venmo, so.
Or drugs. So I guess that's a good thing for me. I don't have to cross it all out. Yeah, just cross it. I don't have a use for either. but I have seen people put like little wine glasses, you know, like because a lot of people will get drinks at a bar.
Yeah.
And they'll split the payment, you know,
right.
I'll Venmo you the $10 for that drink or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, a little cocktail glass or whatever,
yeah,
martini
champagne
glass.
Champagne bottle.
Yeah, little champs. So anyway, so I, little finger foods.
Yeah.
So poo poo platter. So my point is, I said I didn't like Venmo for a couple of reasons, and I have not used Venmo in many years, even though it always comes up whenever my wife is like, oh, we got to pay this person for this at school or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'm not signing up for Venmo.
Whoa.
Because I did sign up when I first had my kids in school. I, of course, you know, got on the Venmo train, and I noticed three things. Number one, the public aspect. I made a couple payments, and all of a sudden people are commenting on the payments. I'm like, wait, what? These are public. People can see these. Why does anyone need to know my business?
Who comments on the payments? Who are your friends?
Isn't that a thing? Like, people liked them, right?
Like if you send it to someone, the person you send it to might like it.
Yeah, you can.
Okay,
like
that's
and
what
comment.
You're saying.
No, you can like and comment on the on the feed.
I never write on people's.
I know. You're clearly abnormal. You're an abnormal Venmo user.
Obviously.
So that was the number one thing I noticed. The second thing I noticed is that back in the day, and I think this has changed, you had to link your bank account and not necessarily a debit card, right? So
yeah.
I'm fine with linking my debit card, although I'd rather link a credit card. So it's kind of like that buffer between the payment and my bank account, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a debit card is a little step closer, and my bank account number is like, no, thank you. I'm not giving that to anyone.
Yeah.
So that's the second thing I didn't like, is that it had to interface with my bank, and I didn't like that. I wanted to use my credit card. That was the second thing. Third thing was when I had a balance of, let's say I had a balance of $50 and I make a payment to you of $25 mm-hmm. for some apps. It took the payment out of my checking account once again instead of out of my Venmo balance.
Right.
And I think that might be a default thing.
Yeah, I always thought that it would. I mean, that obviously happens still. I just don't get that. Like, why doesn't it get taken out of the current balance?
I'll tell you why. Because Venmo is collecting interest on millions of users' balances without them realizing that every time they make a new payment, they're collecting a new payment from your bank account. And that's the third thing I did not like about this. And so again, these are the reasons why I don't like Venmo. And these are also the reasons why I really like Square Cash, which is kind of the competitor that has never taken off. You know Square, but Square Cash, I've been talking about it for years.
No one cares.
No one cares. They're not using it.
I Venmo someone $20 from my debit card, because if I did it from my credit card, I would get charged interest.
You get charged a percentage.
Right.
Right? Like Venmo will charge
you. It would be like 22 or 21 or whatever. Exactly. So if I Venmo someone $20, like where am I being charged interest from my debit card?
No, they're getting interest. Venmo is basically like by them.
From Wells Fargo or Bank of America?
Whoever they have their account with. Like let's say Venmo has $1 million in their little bank account. They're collecting interest on that money as people use their service. Now, to be fair, Venmo is losing a ton of money.
Yeah.
There's a crazy article about how Venmo is like, it was in the Wall Street Journal. If I can find it, it would be so great.
Wall Street Journal, Venmo.
Maybe I'll just Google
that's
that.
That's what I would do.
So Venmo has 40 million users, and literally they cannot turn a profit. So this story, let's see. Oh my gosh, it was just an insane story.
They should just put ads on the app.
Ads on Venmo? Interesting.
Anyway, long story short,
I just don't like Venmo. So that's it. I don't use it. I will use anything else. The thing that I do use, and I ask everyone to set it up when I need to do a payment, is called Zelle. And Zelle is built into your bank. So there's no sign up.
I use that sometimes.
It's like in your bank account app. It's amazing. Yeah. And the money goes in instantly. There's no like middleman. It's just done. Straight up done.
But so are additional details shared?
The details that are shared are
just what's there, that I can see
is your name,
how
much you paid someone, and also what it was for.
You don't see how much they pay.
No, you don't see how much you paid. You just see that you paid someone.
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, that's my rant on Venmo. So I'm not judging you if you use it. It's fine. It's a personal preference for me.
Yeah.
And also security thing with the whole debit card thing. Okay, speaking of security, since I always say speaking of now whenever I transition to a new story, so I'll just have to stop doing that. But this is fascinating and something that I think is very important and something that I've kind of known for a while, but I've never seen an actual report on it. Cyberscoop.com says that when you stop using an app or you kind of let an app lie dormant, you're more likely to have that app broken into by a hacker. And this makes a ton of sense because think about it. You haven't used an app in a while. All of a sudden you get an email. And it's like, oh, your account was, logged into. You're like, wait, what? I haven't used that in forever. Well, here's the reason why. Let me give you the details. Number one, 65% accounts that experience an account takeover and attack, basically when someone logs in with your username and password, like your legit stuff, they just figured it out. Those accounts have usually not been accessed by their true owner in more than 90 days. So basically when an account is dormant for a while, it's easier for a crook to get in, and they also steal stuff from you. So a lot of times they'll do this with like loyalty points, like your United points, your Southwest points, because a lot of times people don't check those all the time.
Yeah.
So by the time you notice that your points are gone, it's like too late. It's like, oh my gosh, what happened?
Yeah.
It might steal money from like a bank account that you don't log into a lot, stuff like that. So here's why this is a problem. So when you log into your accounts, like you log into your bank account, I'm assuming a couple times a week, right?
Yeah.
Well, every time you do that.
10 times a day.
Yeah, 10 times a day. You're waiting for those Venmo payments to clear your bank account.
It takes time.
So every time you log in, your bank gets a little record of which device you used to log in, where you logged in from, how you logged in, time of day, right? It builds a little kind of log of who Megan is and when she logs in and how she logs in, right? Mm-hmm. That's why when someone from Russia logs in, they go, hold on, Megan's never logged in from Russia. Like, what's going on here? We know that the last 35 times she logged in from the Hollywood area. We're going to block that Russia login. Well, if you don't log in for a long time, guess what happens? The system
forgets.
Exactly. It doesn't have much to go on. Oh. So if you log in from Tampa, Florida or New Jersey or Colorado, it's like, well, we don't really know. So they just let it proceed.
Uh-huh.
So obviously depending on the level of sophistication with their with their security.
Right.
So that's why you should log into your apps, every, month or so.
But you're talking about banks, right? Or you're talking
anything.
Oh.
I mean anything. Anything that could be taken over. Your email address, your bank, your loyalty points, any account that you have that is you. If you have an old Instagram account, let's say, if you don't log in, these computers, these fraud detection systems don't really have much to go on. So again, That's I thought that was really fascinating because it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Also, let me just. I thought this was also interesting in this article. So you always wonder, how do these people break into your account, right? Like, where do they get my password? So two common techniques for getting into people's accounts. Number one is credential stuffing. This is when scammers take the credentials that they found online, like when services get hacked. It's like 25 million username and passwords were leaked online. They'll take all of those and they will just literally try them in as many services as possible. Like they have an app that will literally, a program that will just automate that. And they'll try every combination in Yahoo and Google and whatever.
Yeah.
The next one is called password spraying. This is a little bit more imprecise, and they just use scripted bots to basically test commonly used passwords against random usernames. So that's not going to work. So basically they can go through like John Doe 1, 2, 3, and then they'll try like password 1, password 2, password 1, 2, 3. And that's why they say—
doesn't it lock them out?
See, this is the thing about all the security stuff. Many times it does,
yeah,
but not all the time.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times what these hackers are doing is they're preying on systems that are a little bit unsophisticated.
Yeah.
And so that's why I always say you don't want to use the same password across a bunch of sites, because you might use your password for Gmail, which has very sophisticated login, hacker detection,
mm-hmm.
but you might use that same password at your random, whatever account.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, it's like that account is hacked, and now they just take that password and they use it at Gmail.
Right.
That's why you don't want to use the same bad password at two different places. Because I'm not worried about Gmail getting hacked necessarily. I'm worried about the random account that you set up with, michaelsflowershop.com, and now you're using that same password on Gmail, and Michael's Flower Shop gets hacked, and now the hackers try that password and username across a whole bunch of other bigger websites.
Yeah, that makes
and
sense.
In that case, they just have your stuff.
Right.
So Google's going to let that go through, because unless they figure out, it seems suspicious.
Right. That's why I love the fingerprint thing.
Fingerprint's great. I mean, that's also good, but a lot of times that has to be backed up by your password, you know?
True.
So Instagram, along these lines, is testing a new way. You ever hear about people that get locked out of their Instagram accounts? Like,
yes.
This happened to my cousin the other day. She basically sent me a text, or my brother did, saying, hey, she's locked out of her account because someone just stole her stuff, and now she can't get back in because they changed her email and phone number. And so now she can't get any of her recovery stuff. Go on, you say, I need my recovery. Instagram is finally kind of getting hip to this and saying, you know what? We're going to make it a little bit easier for you to regain access to your hacked account. So here's how they're doing it. If you put your password in a whole bunch of times and it doesn't work, and they recognize that because they notice that you're logging in from like the same phone that you normally log in from, but it's not working, they will now give you a link to basically enter the email address and phone number that you use to sign up to Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So their system remembers this stuff, of course, right?
Right.
And so once you verify that, they will send a 6-digit code to your phone.
Okay, good. Like Twitter.
Yeah, and let you log in, basically.
That's good.
So again, they're using sophisticated algorithms to figure out, like, Megan logged in 25 times from this iPhone,
mm-hmm.
from this area, from these IP addresses, KTLA, her house. All of a sudden, we get this random login from Russia. And I use Russia a lot.
Russia again.
Yes.
Because obviously China, they can't even get on
social China,
media.
They're not trying to. Yeah, China, we don't have to worry about them hacking.
They don't
hacking,
even know what even, it is.
They can't even get to those IP addresses.
Right.
So again, Russia, they go, wait a second. And then all of a sudden, this random IP account from Russia changed her password and her phone number. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Now we see little old Megan trying to log in from Hollywood again.
Old?
From, okay, young Megan.
It's okay. Little old Megan. That's fine.
So logging in from her iPhone again from the same place she's normally logged into 100 times,
yeah,
and she can't
work.
Get in. Now we're going to throw her a bone. We're going to give her this one-time code, and we're going to say, look, go ahead,
okay.
Get into your account. And then they also freeze the username. So that you know, it's like, because a lot of times these hackers will take you and then they'll take your username and they'll sell it on the black market or whatever. They're going to freeze that.
Oh my gosh.
And there's a lot that goes on, Megan.
It's so
crazy. A lot to keep up with.
It's such a scary world out
there.
I know,
especially if you're on Instagram.
Yeah, jeez. Okay, so our next question comes from Vincent Reyes. Apple Watch or Fitbit? I know, I feel like we talk about the Apple Watch in every podcast, but he wants to know, basically his wife's birthday is coming up and he's been debating if he wants to get his wife an Apple Watch or the Fitbit Versa. He has an Apple Watch and the battery life is what makes him dislike the purchase. And unless they made significant strides in longer battery life, he doesn't want to purchase another Apple Watch for his wife. And then he says he likes the Fitbit because of the battery life, but not sure if his wife would prefer the Apple Watch. I would like your thoughts as to why lean one way or the other.
Okay, so you probably know my answer.
Yes.
Right? So I'm going to recommend the Apple Watch, and here's why. I've had the Fitbit Versa. I bought that. And I used it for like a year, I think, maybe 6 months, a year. And I loved it because I'm a big runner. I love having that data of running. And I think when it comes to smart devices, I think the Fitbit Versa and the Apple Watch and probably the Galaxy, the new one, the Galaxy Watch Active or whatever it's called, are probably the three best at this point. But here's why I like the Apple Watch the best. You say your wife has an iPhone. Mm-hmm. It's going to work the best with iPhone. I am sitting here, when I look at my Apple Watch, like there are little things that pop up on the screen that just amaze me. It's like literally it kind of has learned when I work out during the day. So all of a sudden I'll just get like a little button that says start a workout. And it's like, oh, I don't have to like go through the settings, any of that stuff. Obviously, and the Versa, I believe, does this as well. But when you start a workout, and I know that the Samsung devices do this, it automatically recognizes that. So when I start running, normally I do start the workout before I start running, but a lot of times if you're just doing something physically active, like if you're hiking or whatever, or you're taking a long walk, all of a sudden it will say, hey, we noticed that you're doing something active. Do you want to record that workout? And it will back time. So it remembers, like if you hop on your bike and start taking a long bike ride, it will go back to the first minute that it noticed that you started biking. Yeah. So that's kind of fun. I know you want one of these.
I know.
So I like that aspect. Now, the battery life is definitely the biggest downside of the Apple Watch. But what I've just gotten accustomed to doing is at night, before you go to sleep, you take off your Apple Watch, you put it on the charger. That's it.
So what is the battery life?
I don't even know. Like, it's a day. I mean,
has it ever died for you?
Only when you do crazy exercise. So like yesterday, I didn't really do that much exercise. My battery was at 10% right when I was going to sleep.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird because that doesn't normally happen. Some nights it's at like, I don't even look. I don't look because it doesn't matter. I use it for the day. It gets through the day. Mm-hmm. Now, some people may say it gets through a day and a half, maybe 2 days. But what I notice, if you do any sort of physical activity for like a half an hour or longer, especially an hour, that's going to drain your battery significantly because it's using the GPS and all the sensors in your watch. So it's taking your heart rate more. It's doing more GPS. That's why the battery goes dead. So
what about playing music and like Bluetooth? That doesn't really...
Not as much. I mean, it will affect it, but not as much as the workouts. Because when your workout is on, it's firing every sensor in that phone to get the most accurate data about your workout. So that's why it's taking up the battery more, right? The Fitbit Versa, the biggest benefit is basically, I think you need to ask your wife in a sly way because you don't want her to know because it's a birthday present.
Right.
Just be like, is sleep tracking important to you? So that's the main advantage of the Fitbit Versa is two things. Number one, sleep tracking. You can track your sleep, and I love that data, but it's one of those things that you sort of have to give up if you're on an Apple Watch. It's kind of fun. The Fitbit will tell you exactly how long you slept, when you tossed and turned, when you had deep sleep, when you woke up, when you went to bed. It's really cool. You also get about 4 days of battery life with that one.
I was going to say, how do you charge it?
So you basically, with that one, you just kind of charge it like whenever you feel like it. So I think for a lot of people, the routine is before you get into the shower, just put it on the charger.
Okay.
So
got it.
That's, 20 minutes here or there. Well, it depends how long you're spending in the shower.
20 minutes.
An hour.
3 hours.
Yeah. An hour or two here.
Whatever
hour
your shower
there.
Routine
yeah,
is.
Whatever
taking
your,
a bath.
Yeah. Yeah. Take a bath, put it on the thing.
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh, we have so many more things to get through. So, we played the the new Harry Potter game. This is called Harry Potter Wizards Unite. I went to an event at Universal Studios in Hollywood on Tuesday night. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of like YouTube influencers, a lot of people I didn't recognize, like sometimes it's like tech journalists, sometimes, it depends on the event, right? This one was a lot of like, it was like a mixed crowd of like YouTubers, print people, video game people, but you know what I mean? It wasn't like anyway. So long story short, we got to play the new game, and this is a game that is very similar to what Pokemon Go is, except with Harry Potter. It's made by the same company, Niantic. It's also made by a company called WB Games, which I guess is part of Warner Brothers, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
But you are a new recruit, in working within the Statue of Secrecy Task Force. Does that make any sense? Does that ring a bell?
No.
You're helping solve the mystery of the calamity. Does that make any sense?
No.
Okay, wow.
Well, so I'm not a Harry Potter. I mean,
oh, you're not?
No,
I thought you were a Harry Potter head.
No, I watched all the movies.
Okay, and you don't know what the calamity is?
No.
Did you watch them with your eyes closed?
I didn't take notes. Let's just say that.
So players will be able to explore their real-world neighborhoods and cities to discover mysterious artifacts, cast spells, encounter fantastic beasts, and iconic characters. So I'm not a Harry Potter person. I read the first half of the first book, and I found it very interesting. I actually really liked it. I just never really got into it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So again, there's muggles. Like, people throw around all these.
Do you know what a muggle is?
A muggle is like a regular person.
Yeah, because I told you that today.
No, I knew that.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did. Okay. I knew that.
Okay.
There's muggles. So your job, the beauty of this game, and here's my thoughts on the game. If you are just kind of an average gamer that finds things really interesting and technology really interesting, I think you'll find this interesting because it uses augmented reality, so it puts the game in the world around you. So when you're in your neighborhood, you see the streets on a map of your neighborhood, and you walk around and find stuff and find these little challenges. And what I understand the challenges to be is I saw like some kid that was like entrapped in thorns, and I had to wave my magic wand to like free him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I collect that kid, and that's like kind of like I won like that little part of the game, right? And then I saw like a slug that was in like this big, massive, like moving, like, you know, yucky bulb or whatever, right? And I had to like wave my wand and like cast a spell on that slug to like.
Is the wand your phone?
Your wand is your finger on the phone screen.
Okay.
And every spell, you have to trace like a little spell on the screen. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just for the beginner part of the game. Maybe towards the end, you have to like figure out the spell. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I only did like four or five of these little things. But I will say a couple things. Number one, all the people in the little Harry Potter world that we were in, like, were obsessed with the game, watching me play it. They're like, what is that? Now, they're Harry Potter fans, so maybe that's not telling.
Right.
But I think that this will be an interesting game because it's available Friday, June 21st on iOS and Android. It's free to download. Of course, there will be in-app purchases. But I think this will be interesting because here's the thing. When Pokemon Go came out, it had a built-in audience of video game nerds, right? People were very familiar with the Pokemon video games that played Pokemon Go, and it became this huge sensation. It brought in other people as well, people that liked mobile games. With Harry Potter, the Harry Potter fan base might be bigger than Pokemon, but a lot of those people just know it from the books and the movies. They're not necessarily video game players.
Right.
And I think that's the challenge this game might have is it could be super popular, it could eclipse Pokemon Go, or it might not be as popular because the muggles that play, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
The regular people that play.
Yeah, but I feel like the people that are into it don't want to be called
muggles. No, they don't want to be a muggle. They think they're in on it. Yeah, see all these weird...
Slytherin.
Ugh, what does that mean? Oh, Slytherin.
You're
going to
like hurt people's feelings.
I do like the Butterbeer. I tried that.
Yeah.
I did go on two rides.
I have a question about the game.
Yes.
So if you have, get the game and I'm like walking around, will I get notifications when like there's something?
I think so. I don't remember.
That was the Pokemon Go. Yeah. That's how Pokemon Go like became so popular. Is like people would literally walk to like parts of LA or whatever just to like get that special dinosaur or whatever they were called.
Absolutely. But, and I think that's all part of it.
Yeah.
That is part of Niantic said on stage.
Yeah.
That a big part of the game is helping you explore your world around you.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it gets you out and about. And like, you might go to a park in LA that like everyone says, this Muggle Dwarf is at that park with the bench. And you're like, oh, I got to go
Muggle Dwarf
hike up there. And so I think that's a big part of the game. Or, yeah.
Cool.
So that's it.
That's
cool. Going to do it for the show. Yeah.
Voldemort is there.
Thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe to the show if you haven't done so already. You can just search Rich on Tech in your favorite podcast app. That could be Apple Podcasts. That can be Pocket Casts. Overcast is also a great one. And the cool thing about Overcast is you can actually use it to share a clip of the show on social media. So if we say something that's really cool, go ahead, clip it off and share on social media. It's kind of fun, and it makes a great little thing where like you can listen and see what the podcast is. My book is called 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. It's available right now on Amazon in paperback. And don't forget to sign up for my newsletter. Send it out every week. It's at richontech.tv. Put your email address in, and I send you a little synopsis of the things that I think are interesting in the tech world, kind of like this podcast, but a written version. Producer Megan, did you enjoy the show?
Yeah, today was was fun. It went by fast.
Do you think the audio is going to be better than the show from China?
Oh, yeah.
And have you recovered from your jet lag?
I don't think so.
No, I know. It took a while this time.
It's hard to like go to sleep because I'm so used to staying up all night because that was China for us. Because it was like at 5 p.m. in China, yes, it was 4 a.m.
It was a big time change.
Yeah, big time change.
All right, I'm Rich DeMuro. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great day. We will talk to you real soon.